गुं हवामहे कविकवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणा ब्रह्मणस्पत आनशृण्वन्नुतिभिस्सेदसातनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. Let's also chant the Dhyana Shloka and first verse of this Dakshinamurti Stotram, the main one. Then we'll start everything else. Mauna Vyakya Prakatita Parabrahma Tattvam Yuvanam Varshishthanteva Sadrshaganaihi Avritam Brahmanishtam Acharyendram Karakalita Chimudramanandarupam Swatma Ramam Mudita Vadanam दक्षिणामूर्तिमीडे विश्वं दर्पण दृश्यमाननगरे तुल्यं निजान्तर्गतं पश्यन्नात्मनि मायया बहिरिवोद्भूतं यथा निद्रया यस्साक्षात् कुरुते प्रबोधसमये स्वात्मानमेवाद्वयम् तस्मै श्रीगुरुमूर्तये नम इदं श्रीदक्षिणामूर्तये. So, up to now in the class, this few months we studied this wonderful text, and we took that small detour towards the end, after the eighth, where we went to this commentary. For a few weeks we spoke about Maya. We diced that out as well, so it was quite enlightening, I felt. And I've been doing all the talking, so now that this is finished, then we'll let you do the talking, what you want to discuss, questions or whatever, comments, whatever you want about what we studied or things connected to it. So anything you want to ask, whatever, I leave it up to you. You have the power to either unmute or to be Maunavyakya, to be silent.
So I'm this is not nearly questions, but just simply some reflections.
Yes, yes.
And maybe it'll lead to some questions. But you know, Guruji, that when you were helping us to teach our granddaughter essence of this, and we asked about Maya and what does it mean and so on, and how do you explain it to a 14-year-old, the meanings of it, etc. So we grappled with it all together. So. I have to tell you that the detour you took was the most helpful for me, and first of all, I want to say thank you for that, because just the clarity with which he has addressed it in those verses. And for me, I'll tell you what makes the difference is to see it in two ways, In the mithya in two ways, In the macrocosm, and that can be a belief, however you choose to believe it. But the microcosm and how, you know, you can separate yourself from Atman through the Maya, you know, that to me was most helpful, very helpful, right? So I feel like now we're going to start our second granddaughter, you know, soon, And as teachers, for us, it's given some clarity as to maybe how to handle it for ourselves, and to, you know, to be able to explain that this is, these are levels in which you can understand it, you know. And so I just wanted to say, I just want to make sure I get the terms right, and this is comes from seeing that space is not just out there, but you are an extension of it, right? And I, when I meditate, I sometimes may be using it wrongly, the term. So I just would like some clarification on that, you know. Bhutakasha, Chidakasha, Chitakasha. If you could just explain to me, you know, those three terms and what it means.
Sure.
That would be helpful.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. This is, that's why I took the detour, as I said, because when I was studying for the class, because I'd also read Suresh Vadacharya's commentary there, and this just really struck me, what he was writing on Maya, and I think it's those classes are worth reviewing. It's just phenomenal because, exactly said, because the clarity about it. So the thing with Akasha, Bhuta Akasha, as he said, is the external space. That's the element space, right? So it's the physical manifest. Actually, really is also the subtle one, but well, let's not get into it. The physical space, that element. So that's one. Then the subtler one, the mental one, is chittakasha, because chitta is the mind. So chittakasha. And then chidakasha is the space like awareness, because the awareness itself, chit, becomes a da because of sandhi rules. It gets softened. Chidakasha. And actually, one monk, one teacher, Swami Nubhavanandaji, he always talks about space like awareness. And then I noticed that's what chidakasha means, space like awareness, because it's not really space. Because in the mind, it is space. Because in the mind, you have space that you actually have things in. But once you get to the consciousness level, awareness level, there's no dimension, right? Because you as an awareful being, it's the space is reflected in it, the space. So that's, but it's similar to the space. It has something like the space. That's why space like awareness. And one thing very much pointed out in this again comes from Swami Tattvedanandaji, who talked about this so much that really helps to understand this on how, okay, you're the physical space, Bhutakasha. When you look at Bhutakasha, you don't really experience it through the senses. Because what you experience with the senses are, you need for the senses, you need something tangible for the senses. So you experience objects, meaning from seeing, you know, hearing and touching and this, yes. But for space, you know, all three of those, okay, will be in space because you're going to, I see you, so I see, you know, I can infer the space between us. I hear, so I can say, okay, sound is coming from this direction. I feel my body, so I feel directions. But that's with objects. The moment, just focus on the space, remove the objects. It's not through the senses. So you only can infer through the mind. That's why it's, as he points out, it really is that the space is a mental category. Because without the mind is what, you know, when you just go to focus on space, then it's the mind itself. You're not dealing with the senses like this. So that's where you can merge, when you look at it close, you merge the external space, Bhutakasha, into the Chittakasha. And the amazing thing about this is meaning, okay, the space out, there's no space outside, the space is in your mind. Vishwam darpana dishana nagari, we just said this. The space is reflected in the mirror. The space reflected in the mind, it really is in the mind. Now, of course, because of our habit, I'll say, okay, this object is outside of me, right? This cup of warm water is outside of me. So I see that, but if I really look at it, where's the space? That space is in my mind. Where is this located? It's in that space which is in my mind. So this is kind of like the external space can be swallowed like this when you really look at it, it's just in your mind. You try, just sit and meditate. We probably had some meditation on in the class, I don't recall. Basically meditate, just focus on the space, forget the objects. If you keep just focusing on the space, it's not something external. You focus on that, then focus on your mental space for some time. And then see, they're both limitless. You can't separate. So that's one step. You can say then, when you're just focusing on the space and you see it's in your mind, what happens next is you say, well, now I'm aware. When you're aware, awareness is space like awareness. It's like space. So that space in your mind, just the space, your awareness is like space. Now, can you separate that from the space in your mind? The background of the mind is the space of the mind, and it is awareness. It's not something separate from it. So then you can take it that next step to see what is the space. It is the awareness itself, the consciousness itself, right? So really, then you see the whole thing is the awareful being like this. And then, you know, so again, and then the thing about, again, about Nididhyasana, I'm like this, okay, when you're sitting, you're observing it closely, you can have a better idea of it, yes. But then you're just seeing things as they are because you're dropping your ideas, just looking at it closely. It's not for the Nididhyasana, not for a specific experience, because meditate, oh, it feels very nice. But yes, it feels nice, but what is that you're learning from it, that you're seeing from that angle? So seemingly three different akashas, but when you look at it closely, it's not different ones. The space is the awareness itself, the space. Now, of course, the physical space itself, when it gets swallowed into, when the physical and mental space gets swallowed into chidakasha, it's not the same as space, because the difference there is there's no space and time when you go into the awareness itself. When it gets to the mind and into the external, yes, there's some limitation, space and time, you can say. But again, once you empty the space of all the objects, where is the space and time anyway? The space, there's no space anymore. The space we think of is space because of limitations of objects in it, like this. So this is quite a phenomenal thing to look at. And one of the things, there's some key things that Vedantins say are there that really help us to grasp what this is, to grasp, again, not at the mind, but because not the mind is just the starting point, but to really see it directly. And one of the things that is very useful is the space, that it's the space is the closest thing to the absolute in the manifest world and also in the mind. That's why you can kind of backtrack to the awareful being through observing the space like this. So quite a phenomenal thing. It's like the Ishvara left some breadcrumbs for us to follow, right? And this is one of these breadcrumb rows is the space. And the thing is, last point on it, then when you're sitting there and you're just trying to focus in the space, whether the external space or then mental space, what is cluttering the space? What is, you know, what is keeping away from just seeing space directly? It's your own ideas. You're adding the objects. You sit here, just focus in the space. No, but I want to focus on these things. So I'm the one who's covering it with other things. Nobody else is. I can blame some universal Maya, but my ideas are cluttering it, my ideas are covering it, right? If I don't look at those, where's the limitation? So this is how it's pointed out. It's a really, really wonderful, wonderful tool to look at it through these.
Yeah. Thank you.
Did you, anybody else, any questions or comments, concerns?
Yes, Gajan Nam.
Yes.
It's not really a question. I guess it is. In the last class, you had spoke of talking of the layers of the emotional body, not integrating a problem, not being able to integrate into my conscious being,
mm-hmm.
for example. And then you spoke about, well, how to do that. You know, to study, to reflect, to meditate, to do the things that we do through Vedanta class.
Mm-hmm.
And like you're, when we meditate on the space, you know, I have found that helpful.
Mm-hmm.
However, I really feel you know, a real separation, or should I say, it's not a separation. I feel extremely connected to my physical body, okay, and the physical world around me. And I know, you know, and those are the things that I it makes sense to me. The Vedanta texts, these are answers that it's relieving to me. It makes sense to me. Sometimes my mind wants to tell me, oh, you'll never understand this. It's a different culture. It's a different language. But none of that matters. I understand that, and I'm able to be okay with that. But I just find it a struggle, and I don't know if I'm making myself clear. And maybe talking about, I have, you know, you talked, I know this is sounding kind of, you know, not organized, but that's how my mind works. Mm-hmm. You spoke about the idea being backwards of when we think of, we have a body has a mind, and then we look at Atman.
Mm-hmm.
That being backwards. And that absolutely makes sense to me. Yes, that is so backward. It's the other way around. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that, but getting to that point, you know, it's like saying if you're enlightened, you probably aren't. You know, because it's my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I find myself a lot, even after class, just going, wow, what was that all about? I can't really put it together. And I'm not sure why that is.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that connection to the world that I know is not the reality, but I'm still connected, very much so. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's the human condition. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I am not looking for a quick fix. I'm looking for a way to make sense of this, and it makes so much sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm learning it in a class, but I guess what I'm trying to say is applying it is where I find the difficulty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anything I'm saying makes any sense, but
sure. I think we're all going through that same thing. Is there's the dichotomy that when you look at it closely, you have time, you're studying, you hear the talk, you meditate, and it seems very clear. But then when we face other things in life, then it gets swept away by other habits. And this is because of the long habit of my identifying as this body as something limited. It's very long habit, and it takes a lot to see through it. Now, imagine you didn't see through it at all. Like in the past, we were probably, you know, before we looked into this, we were much more bound by it, right? Now, actually now, the suffering in some way, well, there's, now, well, let me just backtrack. So the thing is, to change it completely, it takes a lot to look into. And it takes a lot of, you know, we have to really look into it closely and really want to. And the other habits keep, you know, grabbing on. That's really what happens. So we really just have to keep looking at it closely. And there isn't any other way around it. And part of us shies away from it because it's comfortable with the other things, with being still being me, this small individual, with things around. As you said, we all have the little circle that we're comfortable in, and we want to keep going back to that like this. And takes a lot of courage to just, you know, to really to drop it. Now, dropping it doesn't mean, you know, still the morning you wake up, still you know, have whatever, breakfast, coffee, tea, whatever you have, still you deal with whatever you're dealing with the world. You still do that. But the thing is, dropping it is, you know, seeing a different angle, and then, okay, the same day-to-day thing is going to go around. It's not that now it's going to be different. But our view of it will just be different through that other lens. So it takes a lot of courage to really look at it like this. And all the tools we have are there. Shravanam, mananam, nidhyasanam, that's what you do. When we had one of the points that we brought up, I'm pointing out like where I learned it from, like this, the From Swami Paramarthanandaji, who talked about Nididhyasanam, said alert living. This is one of the best things. Because, okay, I'm doing the day-to-day things, but when I keep bringing the fact, I think alert living is mindfulness from Buddhism. I'm probably the same kind of thing, I guess. You're more present when you're doing things, then it's more clear that you're, you know, the awareness is there and the activities and this are there. And then the activities will be get less and less, they have less and less substance, less and less they're binding you. The ideas less and less bind you. And like they'll cover somewhat, but they'll go away pretty soon because you're more alert and aware. So I think this is one of the greatest tools. The more you're aware as you're doing, present when you're doing, the less that small individual is, you know, will be covering up the absolute, you know, you, the conscious being. So I think that's one of the keys. But again, to say, this is the one key, this is the one key, we can't say. We have to keep trying, doing and trying and looking at it. There isn't any other way. And the thing is, each one of us, we can see where, what things catch me more, what things are those that are binding me more. And those things I have to really think about and analyze and look at it. Like here's one example I'll give is... just that comes to my mind. All these, you know, we've been having class for years, so probably all the examples have been said before. Years ago, this doctor's office I went to, he had a poster there, this woman that has tar all over her, and it said, if smoking did to you on the outside what it does on the inside, you would stop smoking. And I thought, hey, anybody who knows who smokes, you know, they should see that poster like this. So the thing is that's the thing. When I see the things that are catching me more, I have to think of it that way. Okay, this is binding me. It's catching me. Yes. What is it really doing to me? You know, when I really look at myself clearly, when I'm really aware, where's the limitation? Where's the problem? It gets caught up in this silly thing and then that identification, what it's doing to me, like this. So, you know. For the Vedanta, will make the poster. Your samskara is making you the unfathomable space, chidakasha, into this tiny little ghatakasha, pot space. Because this is a pot, it's made out of clay, right? Tiny little pot space. Do you want to be the pot space or do you want to be the total space? So, this is the poster we should make for ourselves to remind us about this. Because, you know, when you look back at it, okay, earlier today, this I was so caught up in. Now when we look back and say, my God, how silly of me. How is I caught up? That's the tiny little ripple in the ocean that I am. So the more I look at it and analyze those things, look into those things, and then if there's one thing like this that I get caught up in, I really look at it and learn slowly, through thinking about it in this way, how silly is it really needed? Is that, and I loosen it up and more alert in my day-to-day, it doesn't catch me. If I free myself from one or a few small things, it'll free me so much because that gives me the same tool to free myself from everything else. Because then everything that's binding are my ideas. I dropped a few ideas. You know, if I have 100 ideas that are binding and I drop 10, I have that much more room, that much more space. Like this. So again, what you're saying, we're all going through that. Everybody studying Vedanta sincerely is going through that. And, you know, you look back also a year, 2 years, how much more breathing room do I have? Oh, good, it's doing something good then, like this. But, you know, earnestness needed. I have to really want to, you know, want this, because whatever part I don't want means that that part, the worldly thing, I want the worldly thing, and that worldly thing that is limiting me, like this. So, a few thoughts on what you're saying.
That is encouraging and understanding, so I appreciate you reflecting on that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for bringing all that up. Yes, these are all very nice points you're all bringing up. Anything else anybody wants to ask or discuss?
Mm-hmm. I had a couple of things that had occurred to me.
Yes.
One of them had to do with the roles that we seem to assign ourselves, or the world assigns us, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you had said it all comes from Maya.
Mm-hmm.
And so to live in this world, we have to have roles, right? But is it that we understand that they are Maya and that they're not as important as what's going on with our consciousness, what's going on within us, but it's something that's more surface, something that's really not that important. And almost we need to let go of those roles because it doesn't really define who we really are. Although we have to live with it because we are, you know, in this, like Linda said, this human condition. And so, but it's how do we do that and really, you know, should we just tell ourselves, okay, you know, I'm not really a teacher. You know, this is just a result of past lives. And I'm just the result of all that. And so otherwise, it's not really important, or, you know, use the roles that we seem to have to be greater people with more consciousness, knowing that it's not really us. Is that how we should approach it? Anyway, that was one of the things I had been thinking about.
So what happens is, don't bring result previous lives of this, just right now. Forget where Vedanta, you're now, you're not any, no other lives or anything else. So what happens is this, when you watch a play, some people are acting or moving, some actors are very good. Some actors are not very good. They don't know to do the character well. So you're saying, my God, why'd they get that person get the role? You know, their you know, brother is the director's friend or something, right? Like this. So that's one thing you see there. Other thing you see are some actors that are overacting, you say. So putting too much effort in this way. So what happens, but those that act, they're good actors, they're just completely into it. So when we're doing our activities, you know, if we're identified with the role, we're going to be overacting because all our emotions comes in, we get all caught up in it, right? It's the rajasic. If we're don't care and, you know, and become, you know, it doesn't matter what it is in this, we can become tamasic in that. Tamasic state of mind doesn't work. So whatever duty we have, if we do it completely as it is, means there's no resistance to what I have to do. And there's no expectation because I'm doing completely as it is. So it's done, put aside. So then, you know, then it's, you can do work through it in the cleanest way. This is karma yoga, do it completely. When you're completely immersed in it, then your mind is clear, you're less caught up in it. You're just doing what's needed as it is, and that's it. So this is when you're doing the action like this, because so then it makes, then you're present doing it right here now. You're not focused on result, what'll be later. Not on where did this karma come from, why did it come to me, or I'm so lucky I got this job. No, you're completely with it. Then you're present. Then it's much easier to see through the limitations. So this is when you're doing the activity. Because if I have to do my activity, and at that same time when I'm doing something I have to do, I'm saying, oh yeah, I'm the conscious, I'm the observer, and this, I won't be able to do it properly, of course. You can also be sakshivit, but we're talking just, you're immersed in activity. You have to do it completely then and there, otherwise, you know, you're kind of escaping like this. If you already know you're the sakshi, it doesn't matter because you're not identified as doer at all. But when you're really absorbing at the doership also, you don't feel the doership. The doership drops away. Now, when you're looking at it now, you're looking, oh, I have these jobs. Now you're thinking, I have these roles. I have to do these different things. What did I do yesterday? All these kinds of things. Now that, when you're looking at it, you can see that where are all those ideas of what my position is, what my job is? They're ideas. Vritti, it's just waves. it's actually more like a wave. It's like the reflect, you're like the ocean, the consciousness, and it's just the reflection on the surface. What substance it have? You said teacher. Where is the teacher now? Where is that? You're the conscious being, and there's some idea there, just the reflection in there. So really, when you're doing the action completely in it, the idea of doership won't be there. You're aware, you're present. And then when you look at it, when you're not actually absorbed in it, what is it? Where is that? It's just the reflection that doesn't have substance. So this is how you can do it from both of those. To start complicating it, it's karma came because of this, that starts to be complicated. And that's done. Earlier stages might use that, because then the good thing about taking, when somebody looks at that way, then I take responsibility for it. Oh, I have this and this problem. This, well, my karma, because I did in the past. So it helps to take responsibility, so I'm not blaming the world or the God or anything for my situation. But that's just a preparation. Once we get to Vedanta, you know, what do you mean karma? What karma? That's it. Then you're starting to say, you know, I want to go back to some older scaffolding that's gone, right? The frame is already there. Why do I need to go back and rebuild the frame? No need to do that. You just start, you know, karma yoga, I'm completely present in what I do. And when I reflect, you know, I'm the awareness. What is all this? It's just some appearance within it, okay? Have to really be clear and look at it, because if we start taking other things into it that are from preparation things or views from the perspective of individual, like previous lives, then you won't get out of it, because what is previous life? There's no birth, no death. What do you mean previous life? I'm the conscious being. So if we start bringing that into, for again, preliminary earlier things in this, looking from perspective individual, okay. But once you start looking at it from this angle, those things also have to be dropped, because otherwise it's, you know, it makes the equation much more complicated and unnecessary to do it. Okay. So these are just some thoughts on that.
Thank you.
So you said you had other few things you wanted to bring up now.
Well, the other thing is, I remember you saying that the mind is vibrations. Mm-hmm. And so that gave me a different perspective about the mind, because I always thought the mind was like the devil. The mind is just, could be just terrible, you know, and what it does to people, you know, and the misconceptions and, you know, misinterpretations and miscommunications and all this stuff. But it's vibrations. So I guess when you control it more, then the vibrations are higher. Then you're letting go of all that negative stuff. And is it that you're not letting them in? Or if they occur to you, you just let them go? What's the best way just to maintain a higher vibration for the mind, so that it's not this evil thing that it could be?
Well, when you manage to step back and observe the mind, right, then what can the mind do to you? It's like you know when you go down when you're in the ocean and there are the waves and you go down. Sometimes the big wave comes when you go in the ocean, you go down. What can the wave do to you? It's above you. Can't do anything. So when you're the observer of the mind, what can it do? So, of course, the mind being in a more negative mood that I can't look into it through the tools we have, yes, then you have other tools, yoga or breathing to calm it down, swap positive thinking to build positive thoughts, all those things we have, those tools you have. So those can be very useful for if my mind is in a very negative state that I can't pull out of it another way. So they're useful tools like this. But later on, you know, later on after that, perspective, when you say I'm the conscious being, what is the mind? Mind is just, you know, it's just ideas, and those ideas don't have substance, just reflection. So since they don't have substance, what can they do to you? I'm the conscious being, I'm aware. How do I know that this thought is there? I'm aware of it. There's a thought that I think is a very good thought. How do I know it's there? I'm aware of it. Now there's a thought that I would consider a negative thought. How do I know it's there? I'm aware of it. I'm aware, regardless what's there. So then when you become the observer of the mind, when you pull back to there, what can the mind do to you? It's just a momentary thing, momentary small thing. And when you look into any thought in the mind very closely, the consciousness, you look closer, closer. It's like you look into a wave. Look into it closer, closer. It's all water. So it's closer and closer. It's just you, the awareful being. So then Vedanta is to go to the core of it where there, you know, it's not the mind that doesn't have a place anymore because the mind is just an idea like this. Okay. So again, as when the mind does have more, you know, it's not settled yet. You know, I do yoga and meditate things like this because I know the mind still needs that. It's not that I'm just totally free like this of totally freeing myself from the mind, not identifying with it all the time. But observe the times when you're not identifying with it, right? Of course, when it's quiet. But even when it's not totally quiet, some of the time you know how not to identify with it. Non-identification, you're the sakshi, that's the best, because that, you know, eradicates everything. That what can the mind do to you then? You're not the thought, you're the observer of the thought. Okay. So again, the vibration of the mind and more positive, negative, that again, as a preparation, as I identify with the mind, yes, useful. But then when I go a little further, I have to see I'm the observer of the mind. As the observer of the mind, then, you know, it doesn't catch hold of me. So we use those other tools too. But then we have to learn more and more this one, because this one then, you know, the mind doesn't have any say on the observer, because it's like the first verse here, that it's just reflection. The thoughts are like just the reflection in the mind. What is the reflection? Can the mind exist without you? Right? Can any of your thoughts exist without you? No. Are you there? Are you dependent on your thoughts? You're independent of your thoughts. Whether thought is there or not, you're independent of it. Right? You're independent. You're the substratum for it. So what can the thoughts do? It's like, what can the wave do to the ocean? Come on. That's how we to learn to look at it. And again, we're saying it now, it's very easy maybe to look at it. At the times when it's more difficult to do, yes, we should use other tools. Nobody's saying not to do it. You know, if, you know, let's say I have a bad headache, really bad and not going away. Usually I don't take any medicine, but let's say it's bothering so much. What'll happen if I'll take some pills so it'll go away for a bit? It's not the end of the world. And then do whatever other things to take care of the cause of it, like this. So that way, when the mind is more negative, right, using other tools, it's fine. But then to get to the base of it, to clear from it, those tools of positive thinking and quieting the mind are not going to get to the base. They're just taking like a pill to take away the headache. And maybe, you know, a little bit healthier lifestyle so the headache doesn't come as much. But to go to the root of the problem, that's what, you know, we're looking at like this. Okay. It helps make some sense.
Mm-hmm. Now it just takes some practice.
Oh, yes. I have to be very sincere looking into it. It does take a lot. It does take, you know.
Thank you.
There's no doubt, but why not? What better thing to do?
That's the best thing to do, actually.
Yeah exactly. I agree. Very nice idea. Things people bringing up. Anything else you wanted to ask, or?
I had a question.
Yes, please.
I don't know. I'm sorry I came in a little late, so if you've already gone over it, you can say so. But you were talking once about aparoksha nahuti, mm-hmm. the only direct knowledge.
Yeah.
That's sort of a, mm-hmm. as to really know something. You said otherwise, everything has to go through some medium, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. have some form. So it seems like we're always striving for sort of this unlimited state where we can be aware of our liberation, or aware that we already are already liberated. And then but you talk a lot about how in this lifetime we have a body and we have these limits, and it's a sort of a gift to be able to work things out and go through some sort of transformation while we have form and while we're working through it. So it always feels like we're with the study in Vedanta, like we're pulling in both directions, where we're trying to be aware that we're unlimited, and but we spend, you know, most of our time doing the neti neti and the deconstructing things that are, and trying to understand form, that, you know, just like your what you were telling Rebecca about how we're independent of all these limitations and of the mind and thoughts and you know, all the other things that go with it. So I always feel like we're pulling in kind of two directions at the same time.
Explain exactly the two directions.
Well, it seems like we're striving to be aware of that we are already unlimited and have no limits, no form, nothing to hold us back, and then it seems like we you talk a lot about how we have this opportunity in this lifetime, you know, in within these limits to try to do something and understand ourselves, you know. So you've gone over many examples where you actually need the form to do some things. To negate form, you have to have a form to understand that the thoughts are not binding us. We have to have a, you know, a mind to perceive the thoughts.
Sure.
So it seems like we're negating things, and then you have the aparoksha naputi. We have this direct knowledge that you can as the only way to really understand our unlimited awareness. So it always seems I find it hard to go back and forth. And I know that I the meditation exercises certainly help, because they're quieter, and you know, and you do the talking, so I don't have to talk and ask questions. I can just perceive and try to be there. But so those help too. But it seems like it kind of vacillates back and forth. Need the form. We're not limited by the form. You don't really need the form, but you kind of need the form to actually study Vedanta.
Yeah.
It's so a contradiction. It's hard for me to put it together, I guess.
So one thing is about, you know, that now we're fortunate we have. It's because now we have the interest and ability. Who knows what'll be down the line, right? You know, down the line, we might be in a position where it's very hard to do it. Physically, we're not well. Mentally, not well. We're in, you know, some situation. Who knows how long we're going to be living in this world? What will be next? We don't know. So that's where now we have the opportunity. It's good to utilize. So that's one thing. Now, about the other, in Vedanta, there's two different, points. One is the viveka, right? Atman, atma, viveka. One is sarvatma bhava. You know, I'm the one. Aikyam, I'm one. There's only oneness, only the consciousness. Now, I'm only the consciousness. Just to jump to I'm only the consciousness, it's like, it's, you know, when people just talk on, oh yeah, there's just the one God, there's just God, there's just one consciousness, that's it. Okay, very good. But it seems untangible, right? So that we can say is, the sadhana we can say is the viveka. Because if you see there's just the one consciousness, no problem. Sarvatma bhava, there's only atma. But if I don't see it, then how do I get to it is through viveka, because if I don't see it means there's some confusion there. So the viveka, the more I see I'm sakshi, and I'm sakshi, I'm the witnessing awareness of the body and of the mind and the ego, everything, the whole triputi, right? The object, right? The perceived, perceiver, and perceiving. So the object I see, the seeing, and the one who sees, they're all just, you know, ideas in my mind. They're ideas. And because the consciousness behind it, the sakshi, they're all abiding within there. Because when they drop, sakshi is still there. So we utilize this slowly to do viveka between myself, between I'm the observer, and between the mind and body and all these things. The more the viveka is there, the more they lose substance, and then it's easier to see that there isn't a separation. So you can take it as both of those steps. First be sakshi, And as the other things melt away, you can just abide and you're just the awareful being. Personally, what I can say is that yes, it takes a while for it to see more and more your sakshi. And then the times when it's very clear, naturally you can feel there's just the consciousness, everything is just within it. For some moments or sometime here and there. But when that's not clear, you have to abide, you know, being the sakshi, seeing yourself as sakshi is very helpful for it. So that's like step one, step two. Sadhana is being sakshi, and then it merges into the result of there's only the consciousness. Because just as only consciousness can be much, much more difficult, it's, you know, okay, what does that mean like this? So I think that's how, why you see from both, because we're talking both about that one, which is the natural state, if you want, and then I would limit it, say, where I see. So being sakshi, the viveka, helps to bridge it. And that's why also prematurely we can't drop that. If somebody naturally just abides in the consciousness, everything's just, you know, sees it's like a dream and it's just within themselves, okay, there's nothing to do. But as long as there is the idea of limitation, yes, then viveka, we need to use viveka for it. So that's why we have the two. And then the fact that we can, if some of the time you see the second step, it's very good. I mean, some of the time viveka is not needed. There's just the awareness. That's great, right? But then as long as needed, we have to keep doing, because if we drop that one, then, you know, it drops away by itself and emerges, drops away by itself. We don't have to do anything. So there's no effort involved in that. In being one with everything, there's no effort. In viveka, there, you know, it's not really like, okay, let me separate this and that. But there, because you're observing, so there is some sort of effort, some cognitive effort would be there. You know, it's, again, it's as an observation, so they'll say effortless, but still, you have to bring your attention to that compared to bring the attention to anything else. So yeah, so there's some small effort there. The other one is effortless, like this. So that's why, you know, you see both of them. And that's why sometimes both will be discussed like this also, because both are touched on. Okay, any more questions or anything else we have? Very nice, and very nice to hear all these things. So, one thing I'd like to just discuss is how, as we continue now. So, you all got the email that from next week, 6 classes, you know, the Thanksgiving Day will skip. I'll also, when we start this class, we'll see what people are doing on the 21st of December, because if too many people will already be busy because of the holidays, then we'll do 5 classes, you know. We're not doing a curriculum that you have to have these many classes. And so, so far, out of this class, just a few people have contacted me, but I encourage, you know, just continue, because we'll be going over some of these things. It's the same thing. And the main thing that I wanted to try to do is people that have not done this before, to make it comfortable with them to get into it, like that, so that other people can benefit from it, that's all. And so I wanted to, I'm not taking a text, Tattva Bodha or something like Dirikta Shiveka, not taking, take a few of the core things we learned and just explain them and go through them like this. So, and that way somebody that all this stuff is totally new to them, they'll have some idea. And if it's speaking to them, then they may say, hey, let me study some more, whether in our class or somewhere else, and then it'll do good for them. That was my idea. So that's why I wanted to try. So again, anybody you know that might be interested in this, just tell them, give them the email. If they want to join, they can contact and join, because, you know, somebody would get exposure to just one class, say, oh, I'm not so sure, and go away. But, you know, that's fine. And it's always helpful to see these things. That's why I thought it would be a nice thing to do. So I'm both in the email that I described it in the class, I will try to do with the minimum technical nomenclature as well. You can't get completely away from it, but the minimum. So also if somebody has nothing to do with this ever before, nothing will seem strange or alienating too. That's kind of the idea as well. Let it just be very simple like this. And then, so that's my thought, to try it out. So if you have ideas about this, you know, you can always let me know. I just thought about it and everything and thought it would be a nice thing to try. So, you know, so please, again, just share with anybody you think might have interest in it. Anybody who wants to come is welcome. And, of course, all our classes are too, but this is a like an easy way in the door for some people, I assume. So that's about the upcoming class, so from next week. And same link, same Zoom link, and we'll continue like this. So any, you know, no, I don't think there's anything, questions anything about that class or anything like this. So that's what's upcoming now. And then beginning next year, we'll start a new text. We'll do one Upanishad. I'm considering between two of them. I was thinking to do the Ken Upanishad, but either we'll do that or Mundaka Upanishad. The reason I'm thinking about the other is Sasi Devi was there in the course. Swami Tatvedanandaji was saying Upanishads you study in this order, and he was saying Ken Upanishad is really much stronger sting, you put it after some of these. Now, most of you won't get stung so much because you've been coming for quite a while, right? So that's why I want to see if we have a batch of newer people in, then I think it'll be an easier one to start with. And again, the moment you open Upanishad and study, doesn't matter, you know, we can learn from any Upanishad. It's not that, oh, this Upanishad better than other Upanishad in this, whatever. So it's not that, you know, all the major Upanishads, they give this vision that, and Mundaka Upanishad, similar to Katha Upanishad, will give a broader view of things. The Ken Upanishad is much more narrow, direct view on one thing, very much deep, so it does take a lot more and a lot more maturity to look into it, because you're taking one small thing, pulling it close, close, close. Doesn't give you a little bit variety of vision, so it takes a lot more to look into it. So in this way. So that's why when we get a little closer, we'll see, we'll do one or the other. But that's my plan for in January, that we'll start that. So when we get a little closer, I'll decide which of the two. It's not, you know, either way, I'm sure we'll learn so much from it. So that's about what's planned to come up next, like that. And I'm assuming just everybody here we're just continuing. If for any reason you're not continuing with the upcoming class now, this 6-week class or the Upanishad next year, just let me know. No problem, you know. You have to take a break or something, let me know. Not a big deal, but just so that we have an idea if people are going to be or not, like that. So that's with this. So I think that's everything we have in the agenda now, unless somebody has any other questions or anything else.
Mm-hmm. Gajananam, yes. Just to be clear, so the class for next week up until New Year's is a class that has key points that we've covered in the past?
Yes.
Is that
yes.
Right?
Yes. Okay. And it's going to be both, so it's introductory for people that are new, and also for people who review or clarification on some of these things. And we'll do it. I'm going to do that again. The way I teach closely pretty much to how I learn, so things are a little flexible because that's... So my plan, we'll have an hour talk and then 15 minutes for questions each class, you know, roughly like this. But yeah, that's what we're going to do.
Okay.
And then, so that'll be through the 21st of December is what we've scheduled for. Then we'll have a break, and then January, I don't know the exact date, something like 15, 16, whatever, or somewhere around there, the second or third week, then we'll start. Then we'll, you know, when we get a little close, we'll solidify the date, then we'll start that next Upanishad study. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Very good. So let's say small prayer and finish for today then. Om. Om. Om Purnamadah. Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Good, so have a good week and we'll meet again next week.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Gajana.